This is episode 271 of the 200 Churches Podcast.
So I want to encourage you, pastors that are listening to this, and church leaders at whatever level, you're doing the hardest work I know, because I've done it, and I can't do it anymore. That's why I'm doing what I do, running around talking to people. You do the hardest work, week in, week out, with God's people, in the muck and the ruck of it, and I just want you to know that God has a life for you too that he intends. And the kingdom's not all out there. It's also in you. And he wants to pull off something amazing in you because you're worth it.
Welcome to the 200 Churches Podcast, where every Wednesday we produce a legit episode of ministry encouragement for pastors of small churches. Now, here are two guys who have been encouraging thousands of pastors all around the world for 5 years. Good friends, pastors, and podcast partners, Jeff and Johnny.
This is the 200 Churches Podcast. My name is Johnny Craig. I'm sitting here across the digital desk with the one and only
Jeff Cady. Johnny, it's the digital divide.
The digital divide. There you go. I like that.
You know, it's almost like when you and I move, it's like we started over in podcasting technologically.
It's so weird, right? We've had so many glitches and errors.
Well, you know, we're not in the same room anymore. When we were in the same room, oh my goodness, it was so much. I'm glad we started out the first 4 years in the same room.
It wouldn't have worked. We couldn't have tried the podcast this way at the beginning. We would have quit.
No, well, you know what? I am not finished searching for perfection yet.
That's your lifelong goal.
It is. And I think if you and I would record locally, I mean really locally, and then upload our files, I think that's going to be the perfection. But that means that you got to walk behind me to make sure I remember all my little pieces, and I got to walk behind you to make sure you remember all your little pieces going out of the house in the morning.
It's true. If we always knew we were going to record in the same exact place every time, we could do it. But it's like if I do it from my house instead, it's not going to work. You know what I mean?
We've done it driving down the road before.
We have. That's our commitment level to you, the listener, is we have done it all of these ways.
Today, Johnny, we got to start out thanking our sponsor, trainedup.church.
Yes, yes.
And Scott Magdalene, who provides a great resource for training your volunteers. And again, go to trainedup.church. Use the code 200 Churches, all caps. You can get 10% off their price for life. And you get your subscription to their service. And you can start training your volunteers via whatever screen they want to look at. And it's really cool.
I think if you have used this because of what you've heard on the podcast, we would love for you to send us an email and let us know. Let us know how it's going for you. Get some real life testimonials. I know that I really enjoy it, but I would love to hear if you have found trainedup.church to be helpful. Shoot us an email, jeff@200churches.com. That's better than sending me one. He checks it more on the regular. We would love to hear from you. Scott has put together a great website, super helpful for churches. So we appreciate his continued sponsorship of this podcast. Now, Jeff, we're trying part two here with we had failure to launch with this guest last time.
Reggie McNeil, absolutely. Johnny, today I tried to call you on Skype because we were going to record with somebody else, and I pushed the button. That was a group call. And Reggie answered before you did.
Yes.
But it's a week later and we weren't even called. I didn't even want to talk to him today. And he still answered. So he gave us the business. Yeah, he gave us the business, gave us a hard time, and then let us off politely. But Reggie McNeil, yes, the author of many people would remember The Present Future back in like 03, 04, and wrote a book called Kingdom Come. Oh, my goodness. If you just do Reggie McNeil, and that's McNeal, there's no I, Neal, Reggie McNeil. If you look at his author page on Amazon, you can see all the books this guy has written. He's been a pretty prolific writer, and he's written a lot in his discovery about what is the kingdom and what does the kingdom look like today, and how do we, the church body, how do we work inside the kingdom and for the kingdom? And so we talk about that from his newest book called Kingdom Collaborators.
Yeah. My absolute favorite line, I don't know, I don't remember if I said this last time or not, but my absolute favorite line is, your church will never vote No, your church will always vote to go back to Egypt. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
I thought, Reggie, you have got me wrapped around your finger now with that. That's exactly it. He says, don't put it to a vote, man. You need to make a kingdom difference. Get out and make a kingdom difference. Because if you vote, you'll get voted down every time. But this is a great, you know, you got a taste a few weeks ago of what Reggie McNeil is all about and what he brings. And you're going to get a course this time. You're going to get a whole course of a meal. So let's get into it. This is our conversation with Reggie McNeil.
Well, welcome back, Reggie McNeil. I'm so glad that you decided to record again with us after that failed first attempt.
I've not been doing anything since that failed first attempt. I've been sitting here waiting on this opportunity to record. So let's get on with this. These folks are dying to hear it, and I'm dying to tell it.
Well,
we're all dying, but that's beside the point. Go ahead.
I'm glad you're dying to tell it. Johnny, thanks for joining us today. I'm really glad you could be on this call.
I missed out last time, and then I listened to the little bit that was salvageable from that conversation, and I thought, well, no matter what is going on in my house, I'm going to make sure I get on this call. And I said before we started, I'm here with 2 2-year-olds. So if you hear a lot of screaming and death in the background, that's why. But I needed to talk to you, Reggie, after listening to that last episode.
Well, I tell you, Jeff and I, it was so dull between just the two of us.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, he did need the third voice to make it just, just some energy in it. I mean, apparently Jeff wasn't listening, or he would have known that wasn't working. But
oh, man.
I don't want to talk
either. Well, I did learn something. We won't go into all the details, but I did learn something. So thank you, Reggie, for being the guinea pig on that one.
As I say in the book, fail fast. That's the thing to do. get over.
So I want to go right to chapter 2, foment. I just like the word foment. Foment.
Oh, I know. Doesn't it?
Dissatisfaction with the status quo. Now, Stanley says challenge the process, right? Another way of saying it, but I like this better. Foment. So get into that a little bit, because you're talking about kingdom collaborators, your book Kingdom Collaborators, and kingdom collaborators.
Yeah, let's talk about the title.
They foment dissatisfaction. Yeah. So talk about that for a minute.
Well, you know, the subtitle of the thing is really the point of leaders that turn the world upside down don't do that from a position of being happy with what's going on. People that have the requisite energy to actually make a difference in this world are typically, you know, ticked off about something. And I mean, in a good way, but they just aren't mad about it. They are very politically savvy about how to bring other people into their level of up to their level of discontent. And so they're not happy to brood alone. And keep in mind, this is about a kingdom agenda, as you just mentioned. And the way I think about kingdom, and I don't know if it came through in our last podcast, the salvageable part, if the kingdom is about the life God intends, then as kingdom leaders, we look out and we see people are living a whole lot of life that God didn't intend. And there are things, there are structural issues and there are specific issues. Doesn't matter, but like, you know, poverty is not what God intended. People not able to maximize, and grow into their own skin, that, you know, for whatever reason, through psychological issues or emotional challenges or financial burdens or physical dilemmas, all that stuff that Jesus challenged when he was here. So kingdom leaders look at all these various things and something typically I see one or two issues that'll strum at the core of their heart, and they want to say, I want to move the needle on that. But in order to do that, you've got to bring some other people on board so they think about ways to make other folks dissatisfied at the same level. It's a long answer. I should have just said yes, but whatever the question was. I'll tell you, they have to become good. And this is kind of counterintuitive, and I didn't let you get back in, but I'm going to finish this because I thought about it. They're good at selling the problem. You know, most leaders, I mean, we think people are looking to us for answers, but I can tell you this, you're not going to go very far until you get really good at selling the problem. And that's the part that really helps people out of denial and helps them, you know, get on board with, well, then we got to do something about this.
What is that change process? Is it Cotter's change process where he talks about right at the beginning, create a sense of urgency, right?
And yes, that's certainly a part of it. And every group I work with, we actually use his process because that's very important. And the way you create that urgency, again, is, you know, by selling the dilemma. What's wrong with this picture kind of thing?
I'm going to upset some people. Reg, how old are you, Reggie?
How old am I? I don't think I have to do that on this podcast, do I? I mean, that was in the little agreement we signed that we weren't going to. Tell you what, if you'll give me the last four of your social,
there
I'll
you go.
Give, no, I'm 62.
62. So, Reggie, you're a boomer. Is that right?
I am.
I haven't heard many boomers talk about challenging the status quo. Usually the boomers are the creators and maintainers of said status quo. And so as you're talking about fomenting, which that's a great word in and of itself, but right, fomenting this dissatisfaction with the status quo. What's the biggest problem thinking in a church, right? Who are the problem people? And, you know, I'm making fun of generations. We don't have to talk about it generationally. But who are the problem people who are the defenders of the status quo that you know, those are going to be the toughest ones to sell the problem to, as you say?
Well, yeah, I think people who, if we're talking in the church, and you're probably thinking congregational modality, right? Church is institution, your typical church expression. The people that have the hardest time with this are folks that are really good at the old game and they know the old scorecard. And, you know, we're supposed to come here, you know, get our worship ticket punched for the week and get our sermon pez or youth ministry pez or whatever. And we're consumers of the church as a, you know, dispenser of religious goods and services. And so we know how to operate in that system. We come, we support, we show up, we pay up, we pray up. And nod and go home. Now, when you start talking about, though, engaging the community for life and for change, then folks that are in that old consumerist, non-discipleship, but church consumerist mode and are happy with it, those are the folks that you know, have the hardest time to change because they're quite happy with what they're getting and they know what's expected of them. Once you start talking about, you know, we got to love our neighbor. Wait a minute. That's not part of the deal. I mean, have you ever sat on an ordination council where even the leaders who are being ordained are asked that question? I've never. We'll ask, can you, you know, describe the Trinity in three sentences or less? Or you know, how many wives do you have or husbands and do you drink a lot? But when it comes to, you know, how's that loving your neighbor thing go? I mean, it never comes up as if Jesus was just making up scripture. He wasn't serious about that. So once you start saying, wait a minute, we're supposed to be the people of God partnering with God on his mission in the world. And his mission is not that we have a great Sunday service. You know, his mission in the world, for God so loved the world, not for God so loved the, you know, church service that he gave his only begotten son. You know, well, what does that require? Well, that changes the scorecard. That changes the game, actually. And so I think it's difficult for people in the old game to realize they have it's a new game in town.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like an outward view versus an inward view, right? Those who are the consumer club members and those who are thinking about the people that are on the outside looking in and wishing they had something more.
You know, I did this interview yesterday with somebody about something, I don't remember, but they asked me about the word missional. I said, look, missional, because I've been part of that conversation now for over two decades. And, you know, a lot of folks, again, we have endless capacity to program stuff in the church. So then it became missional program. You know, again, the church deciding, we're going to do some things out in the neighborhood, won't y'all come help us? In other words, we'll design your missional life for you. Just keep coming, keep participating. And it fails, again, at that level to help people become priests, the priesthood of all believers, and figure out how they are mediators and signposts of the kingdom in their own neighborhood and their own family, for crying out loud. Now, having said all that, I want to offer some hope because your pastors may be listening to this going, my gosh, well, you're talking about, I mean, forget it. I mean, that's a new world. No, here's what I am saying. If you can design a couple of things to get people, one of the ways you sell the problem is you get people exposed to the problem. So you don't have to have everybody vote on this sucker that, yes, we're going to suddenly become an externally focused, community engaged, missional, kingdom minded church. Because if you put it up for vote, they're going to vote to go back to Egypt, right? They're going to vote to keep the old stuff. But what you have to do is figure out ways. That's why every congregation I work with, I don't care if it's 50 people. I don't care if it's 30 people. I have congregations I work with that have 34 as an average attendance on Sunday morning. You know, and so, you know, we just think about what's the closest school? How could you just do something to serve somebody and let the virus begin to do its work? Have I lost you guys?
No, you haven't.
Beautiful. My 2-year-old is literally screaming, so I muted my channel.
Okay. Go back.
Well, I wondered because based on our track record, long periods of silence made me very nervous.
Okay. Go back to mute, Johnny.
Okay.
Whew. Reggie, I'm working with my church right now in this very area, and the churches and church people, I have a lot of sympathy for them because they've been trained by us pastors over the years.
We're the ones
that have created the monstrosity in these churches where when you talk to them about being an outward-focused church, they look at you like you're speaking Korean or Japanese or something, you know, when you're actually just speaking English. And they don't really understand church in any other way.
Right. And that's why exposing them, I mean, yeah, I think some good teaching helps. You know, I actually, you know, in a previous volume did a whole book on the theology of kingdom and, you know, the biblical stuff and how church aligns with that. So I think that is important. And pastors sure need to get it. But just to think that they're going to change their people's mindset in a 6-week sermon series or a 4-week sermon series, when we have centuries of training them to be good church people, is that's la la land.
Okay, and, so Reggie, let me stop you right there. So now, right there, I could be a pastor who would say, then it's hopeless. Then it's hopeless. I'm going to start delivering milk.
And that's why I say, no, it's not. If you can figure out something, and for me, every client I work with, this question is the same. Where's your closest school and how can you support them? And I'll tell you why. Because the school, public school, every single social factor or everything that's going on in your community is manifesting in that local school, whether it's drug addiction, parental stuff, economic distress. Everything shows up in the local public school. So you go to the school and you don't figure it out ahead of time. You just go. And if you can ask, how can we help? Don't overpromise and underperform. Just say, we don't know what we can do here, but we know we want to help you succeed in your mission because we believe in kids and we believe that education is a way out of folks being on the road to hell without any chance of escape. Because, by the way, that is true. And so, and if you're listening to this and you don't believe that, then just pay attention a little bit, because I'm telling you, education correlates to every single life health indicator, every single life health indicator, family stability, economic stability, even life expectancy. And I think God cares about all that stuff. So, you know, and kids having a future instead of a certain path into jails. And into, you know, non-performing, you know, just dysfunctional life. So go to the school, figure out something, and then let your people get involved. Make heroes of the right people. This is not about you, Pastor. This is about letting Mary become completely captured by a second grader to the point that Mary can't stop talking about what she found out this week and how she's helping. And all Mary ever volunteered to do is read for 30 minutes, but the second grader took over, you know, because that's what happens. Relationships trump these things, but you've got to get your people in position to do that. I was working with an Episcopal congregation, maybe 125 counting kids, dogs, cats, everybody on Sunday morning. So not huge, but not terribly small, just, you know, a fairly typical congregation. 4 people got it. 4. That's the other thing your pastor doesn't need. You're not looking for a majority vote on this. You're looking for critical mass. Find 1 or 2 people that get it and start with them. And I'm telling you, I went back a year later. They had established a mentoring program in the schools. And the person that was telling me the most about it was a 70-something-year-old guy who could not help but cry when he talked about meeting with his 8th grade, now 9th grade kid, every Monday morning. To get him ready for that school week. I mean, you get Sam up in front of the church talking about that and crying about it, and he has become a viral agent, and he's selling this for you. You don't have to come in with, you know, that's what I'm trying to. take the long haul view, get a few people to get it, give them something to do, watch what happens.
I love how simple that makes it. And you talked about that on the last episode, that idea of going to the public school and connecting. You know, my church, we, and I think this is true of a lot of small churches. So we have two campuses. They both worship, you know, somewhere around 300 people. So that's still, you know, in the range of 200 churches. But it's in a community that at one point was up and coming and now right. is more urban. And I think that has happened to a lot of small churches. If they didn't yeah. move to the suburbs to become big right, churches, right. you know, they're exactly. either in these rural places or they're in a community where the people in the church don't look like the people around the church anymore.
Yep.
And so yep. our church got connected to a local high school where there's like 50 languages spoken in this high school.
Yep.
Where, you know, there's everybody from every corner of the earth in this high school. And we've got people of every age and socioeconomic status from our church working in this high school. And they, it's exactly what you're talking about. They've become viral agents and they tell stories yep. and they, yep. and they want to stand up on Sundays and tell stories and they're getting their small groups involved and they're doing all this stuff. And it's yep. making this huge impact in our church, but also in the school. Now the school calls us, they call our church when there they need go. Something because
yep.
they believe that yep. we'll be there for them. I mean, what kind of testimony do you get to have for the kingdom of God? So I think yeah. you're spot on with that.
Well, and I'll say, you know, a couple of stories come to mind. One on the front end, you just said, now the school calls you. I don't want these pastors. I mean, there's so many pastors and church leaders around that think that schools have allergic reactions to people of faith. That is crock. That has been sold to us by people that just need to make up time on the airwaves and make up enemies to go bash so we can keep energy up. That is crock-a-doodle-doo. If you go to a school and they say, we don't need your help, then brush the dust off, go down to the next school, because I'm going to tell you something. You're going to find a school pretty soon. I was in northwest Houston with, again, just like you said, a congregation. It's a Methodist congregation in this case, and the community had changed drastically around them. They were worshiping, you know, several hundred people, but we had this Saturday morning conference. You know, I had everyone in there. Probably the average age was 64 of the leaders.
Sure.
Yep. And you know, and there were 50 of them sitting there, and we'd been all morning long, and they'd all nodded, you know, yeah, we ought to do this. Yeah. But the genius of the pastor was to bring in the 30-year-old high school, elementary school principal from the school 1 mile down the road, the closest school to them, Title I school, and have her talk about what schools like these days. And that 30-year-old, by the way, she had enough fire and vigor in her. She was not a Jesus follower, but boy, was she a level 5 leader for Collins typology. I mean, and all she just talked about what she needed, and people began to ask her questions. And I'm telling you, I watched 6 different ministry initiatives birth right there on the spot. And that's
yeah.
just positioning God's people. Because God's people want to do good. I mean, you know this. I mean, we don't have worshiping congregations of, you know, not everybody in there is miserable and wants everybody else to be. Most of God's people are good and they want to do good. They just haven't Amen. Been given an opportunity to do it in a way where they feel like this is what I ought to be doing and it gets celebrated. And so that, you know, that's how you change scorecards, start celebrating different things. Just like you said, tell the stories, let people talk about it. But anyway, and give them that exposure. There's another story that came to mind, but now I can't remember it. So it doesn't matter.
So Reggie, you talk about marrying vision and action, and I think you're already talking about that because that was a
yeah.
chapter I wanted to get into, managing volunteers and connecting people to the right tasks and the right projects.
Right.
So is there anything else in that marry vision and action chapter that you'd want to emphasize when you're thinking again, thinking of small things, right? Small churches, small towns, trying to help out a school.
Yeah, I think you have to go in with an idea that you're going to make some mistakes, and you have to give yourself some grace, and you have to have a little bit of a theology of failure. Or you know, we were joking around before the podcast here. It's you know, fail fast. In other words, get in there, mess up, but move on. Decide early on you're going to make some mistakes. It's not going to work. You know, something you're doing is not, you know, and it's going to have some problems. But don't let that be, oh, well, if, you know, if God was in it, everything would be perfect.
Yeah,
I don't think there's much evidence for that, you know, around, because if God was waiting on a perfect world to send his son, for instance, it would, we'd still be waiting. So I don't think that, you know, failure is an automatic disclaimer that God is not for it. Now, we don't need to keep making the same mistakes. But in other words, go into action with the idea that there's going to be some, there's going to be some casualties along the way of some folks, who, and be as smart as you can. But by golly, give yourself some room there to experiment and see what works.
Yeah, that's really good.
Oh, well, yeah, that was the other story. That's I appreciate you reminding me. So when the school says, you go and say, we want to help, and they say, we need a school crossing guard, and you're going, wait a minute, I've got dozens of volunteers I could unleash on this school. Don't do that. Just do what they say. I mean, I need a school crossing guard. Okay, volunteer to be the school crossing guard or whatever, or supply one or whatever else. I promise you, once you deliver and they believe, because schools have been burned so many times by groups that have promised volunteers and all that, they need to know they can trust you to deliver. Don't make up stuff. I mean, don't go selling a bunch of product. Go see what the customer wants. Deliver on that, and I can promise you, like you said, then they'll start calling you because they've got stuff they need.
So, Reggie, as you're working with churches, I mean, this is the kind of stuff you're teaching and preaching to these churches, right? And how much of this stuff have you actually seen get engaged and happen? Like, how many congregations have you worked with? Just give us an idea of the scope of your history in this.
I have no idea. I'm not saying that's a bad question. It's just it's going to be a terrible answer. In terms, I work at so many different levels, you know. I mean, sometimes I'm just the guy to come in because they're wanting to foment dissatisfaction, and they just have me for a one-night stand or a Saturday or a Sunday or weekend deal where I just bust up the rack so they can play a different game. I mean, literally, I've done that hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times. In terms of hardcore, you know, hand-to-hand combat, walking this thing all the way through, you know, several dozen, you know, I mean, or more. Oh, gosh, it'd be more than that over, you know, the last bit where I do a full-blown. Sometimes I just come in a couple times and help people think at the strategic level, and then they go and do. Other times, you know, we walk it through. I mean, it's, you know, 18 months of hard work. So I don't know if that answers your question,
no, that
but
does.
They're all different levels. They're all different levels of involvement. And there again, I don't have something I'm selling. I just kind of listen to what people want and say, okay, well, then let's do that.
Okay, based on that, then, you wrote the book Kingdom Come, right? And you said earlier that, you know, you're describing what the kingdom culture is and how pastors need to, you know, reset their thinking on what ministry and what church is. So then you're doing this work over the past, 10 plus years, and this Kingdom Collaborators book starts, you know, fomenting inside of you, right? And so you had to write this thing, and you wrote like this chapter called Shape a People Development Culture. Probably because as you're working with these churches, you're realizing some of them are going into it with the right motives, but the wrong idea of how to do it, or they're missing pieces. And it looks like you took some of these things that you know churches are missing, and they became chapters in this book.
Well, yeah, and you know, to trace the thinking all the way back to present future, you know, which was a 2001, 2002 release, those ideas, those questions that those are still the questions that haunt me and that I'm pursuing and unlearning and learning about. And so part of what I'm doing here in this book is certainly moving from the strategy level. I want to help leaders believe they have that they can acquire the competencies that are necessary to have kingdom impact. Because it's one thing to wish for it, but in a way, this book is kind of my putting vision to action. I'm telling leaders, your listeners, look, these are learned competencies. You weren't born with a set.
Okay.
And you are not predisposed against this. You can learn to do this stuff. And so my hope was that I could equip a whole bunch of leaders that begin to think, yeah, we can do this. You know what? I mean, if I even started with the competencies with someone that doesn't even know why they're doing it, there are a lot of people that are co-conspiring with God in his kingdom work that don't even know it. I mean, if I just went looking for people that had these competencies, I guarantee you kingdom stuff would be going on, because that's the way God just does his work.
Reggie, I have a question, and maybe it's more of a statement, but I'm hoping that you can key off of it. One second. Do you want an orange? Okay.
Do you want an orange, Reggie?
Yeah, right.
Well, I'm thinking about several things I want.
You know what, guys? I'm so sorry. the height of professionalism is me peeling an orange for my child while I do this. Okay.
Well, you know, life has a way of getting in the way of all this stuff.
So my question is about motivations. So we're coming up here. This is Holy Week that we're recording in, and we're coming up to Easter. And, you know, in my last church, Easter was obviously it's an important date, but it wasn't necessarily a extra large church service date. And so I'm learning this new thing of expecting a crowd. But I'm feeling myself very much thinking about numbers. I'm thinking about numbers. How many people will come this Easter? Is it as many as came last Easter? How many will come the week after? All these different kinds of things. And in myself, I'm thinking about a pastor who wants to get involved in the public school, but maybe the motivations aren't right. What's going to happen if I'm motivated to get involved in order that my church will look better, in order that my church will grow? I mean, what is that motivation going to lead to versus what should the motivation be?
I do believe, and you're onto something that's very important, because a lot of times people are told, yeah, this will be good for your church, go do it, and you'll see the fallout, you know, the runoff from it. Not necessarily. If in fact this is just another church growth strategy, then just stay home, please. Give me somebody in there that really cares about these people. You can develop another scorecard that involves people you're ministering to, but it doesn't necessarily show up on Sunday morning. See, what I've got, what I keep arguing is our scorecard is too restrictive. I don't believe you're going to quit counting the number of people that come for your Easter service, and you're not going to quit counting the offering and all that kind of stuff. I'm not that naive. What I'd like to do, though, is add to your scorecard, expand the bandwidth of what it is you celebrate. So this is not an either or, it's a both and, and celebrating the fact that you have 50 something kids, or you're feeding, as one of my clients, 1900 kids for the weekend.
Wow. Wow.
Who are not ever going to come to this church. You know, what difference is that? I mean, in the kingdom, that's like, really? I mean, that's not even a question. So, again, I think we've got to just expand our bandwidth of how we celebrate God's work in the world, realizing that we're not the point. The church is not the mission. The kingdom is the mission. The church has a role in the mission. The church is not it. And I think, boy, that is just enormous. That's moving from a Ptolemaic universe to a Copernican universe. It takes the church out of the center of gravity and moves it back to, you know, the kingdom at the center of everything. And that's our point of relevance. And that's what we're supposed to be orbiting. And really, it's the church's only job. That's when Jesus mentioned church, he did it once, and he gave us the keys of the kingdom. He didn't give us the keys to the church, the keys to, you know, whatever. He said, your job is to point people to the kingdom. That's it. And so that, you know, once you, what I will say is, once you get that alignment right, you'll have energy. I don't know if you're going to have 14 more people show up on Sunday, but I guarantee you, you're going to have more energy. You're going to see God more at work. You're going to have more to celebrate in terms of God's intervention in this world. And you're going to have a story that's worth telling.
Oh, man, that's good, Reggie. It's good. And, you know, I'm thinking about we're right up on Easter. And so many of us, yeah, we're thinking about Easter attendance. And I'm thinking if the kingdom was the center of the universe, how would you look at a weekend like Easter weekend? Do you want to give that a shot?
You know, I'm not against a lot of stuff that goes on Easter. I don't want folks to think I'm. But, yeah, I think with that opportunity, if, in fact, you have a lot of folks that you don't get, I would really work hard at telling the big story. I mean, you know, I wouldn't, proving to people the resurrection and all, I see a lot of apologetics at Easter. I'm not against that. Well, you don't have to defend, you're probably not going to prove it to those folks anyway, if that's what their deal is. I mean, you don't have to get into why we believe the resurrection. I mean, talk about the power of that everyone wants renewed hope, that hope is the countercultural message we need right now, instead of anxiety and a fractured culture. And Easter is about hope. That'd be the one message I'd try to drill, the hope that God's not giving up on us, the hope that stuff that you thought you couldn't do, you can do. I mean, I'm not talking about a feel good and, a gospel of whatever that wealth and health. I'm just talking about people need hope. And that's the big story I would talk about.
Johnny, he doesn't even know what to call that other gospel, that wealth and health and whatever that
prosperity gospel, yes.
Cheesiness.
Oh, man.
Like that.
You know, wife, I was running Easter sermon past my wife, and she was like, that sounds kind of prosperity. And I was like, all right, well, we're trashing that one. Move on.
Oh, well, and I'm not saying God's against it, but, boy, where in the Bible is that? But anyway, let's say it's something else. How you would get that message? I think if I were pastoring and preaching this weekend, I'd try to find a couple of good stories of folks in my congregation that you could interview. Your sermon will be more interesting anyway, and if you get other people involved. And I would interview them on some aspect of, I mean, even if it's something like, Mary, you lost Frank a couple of years ago, didn't you? Yeah. Well, what is Easter? How has this helped you? Or Fred, your business went down in a massive bankruptcy, talk about the dynamics of that, and what got you through that? I mean, I would just stories of hope so that people leave with a greater sense that God is with us and not against us or not alienated from us.
That's good, Reggie. It's too bad our pastors won't be able to hear that before Easter, but put it on your tickler file for next Easter. So, Reggie, we told you that we keep you only about a half an hour. So, Johnny, do you have any other burning questions or comments for Reggie before we let him go?
I don't know if this is a burning question. I've just really appreciated this time. It's easy as a pastor to get sucked into the machine that is church, the churn of Sunday mornings coming and the churn of the attendance spreadsheet, and the offering spreadsheet. And it's easy to lose sight of what it's all about. As you said, right, the center of our universe is this kingdom of God. I think you've done an incredible job in this short time of really coloring passionately the importance and the need for pastors to orient themselves that way. And I'm glad I'm about to go into my sermon and make some edits for Easter based on this conversation. I really am, because I think you're right. The stories of how hope is breaking forth and new life is breaking forth through our congregations. I mean, those are beautiful stories to tell on Easter Sunday.
If I can say one final word, and it really is our head out the door here, but thank you both. I mean, I've enjoyed it. It's way more fun than some of the stuff I do. So
it's
I
way
love
more
it.
Fun than real work.
You were talking right in the wheelhouse of the stuff that cranks, turns the crank. Here's the thing. I was in local congregational ministry for 20 years. My dad was a pastor. My two older brother are both ministers. My sisters were married to pastors. I mean, I am so deep in the belly of the beast. So when I talk about church and the shifts that we need to make, I don't do that from some outside position lobbing grenades over the wall. I mean, I have been in it. And I know the challenges of there being two Sundays every week, the one that you're trying to get ready for and the one you're trying to get over. And I know the forces that go to work there. So I want to encourage you pastors that are listening to this and church leaders or whatever level, you're doing the hardest work I know, because I've done it and I can't do it anymore. That's why I'm doing what I do, running around talking to people. You do the hardest work. Week in, week out, with God's people in the muck and the ruck of it. And I just want you to know that God has a life for you too that he intends. And the kingdom's not all out there. It's also in you. And he wants to pull off something amazing in you because you're worth it. Now, that's all I got to say.
That's awesome, Reggie. And yeah, that goes right to ministry encouragement for pastors of small churches. Hey, Reggie, you know, you've been a part of my life for the past 15 years. You haven't known it, but your influence has been swirling around me and some people in leadership that I've been connected with. And this whole Sam's Club approach to church that you described, you know, back in the present future has been very helpful. You know, just good terminology for us to communicate around. So, hey, thank you. Thank you so much for joining us. I hope that, as with so many of our guests, not all of them, but as with so many of them, I hope that Johnny and I get a chance someday to sit down with you in person and have a conversation and buy you something healthy.
That'd be great. And if we can't sit down and have the conversation, send the money so I can buy something healthy.
Or just buy something.
Perfect.
All right. Well, hey, thank you so much,
Reggie.
Enjoyed
it.
Thanks, Reggie.
All right, you bet. Bye-bye.
I love Southern fried Reggie McNeil. I mean, that Southern draw, he just draws you in to listen to what he's saying. I mean, if Reggie isn't a good old boy, I don't know if there's a good old boy left on this earth.
You know what? I have, and I think I joked with him about this. I have a mental picture in my mind a little bit of those Southern 60-something men who have made their living on the church. And I don't say that in a despairing way. I'm just saying, right? Like this is a style of person, right? That we know, the Tom Rainers, et cetera, okay? And I said to him, usually guys like you, Reggie, you're the maintainers of the status quo. And it's so amazing to hear somebody like that talking about fomenting, right? Fomenting this dissatisfaction with the status quo. He made the status quo. And here he is saying, kingdom difference makers, they are fomenting dissatisfaction with this status quo that, you know, no doubt he had a hand in at some point in his ministry. And it's so beautiful to hear him talk about that. And it's convicting to me, as now I am, right? I'm coming into this position of leadership, you know, the man with the plan here, and I'm trying to create a new status quo in some sense. And Reggie's saying, no, man, don't go to the status quo, right? You'd be on fire for the kingdom of God. And so cool to listen to this guy tell stories. So, so cool.
Yeah, you can tell this guy's written some books, and he's got the turn of phrase with a lot. I mean, he's been thinking about this for a long time. He's been consulting churches. He's been preaching the kingdom, talking about the kingdom, trying to figure out how kingdom work fits in with the church and the church and the kingdom. And it is. It's really exciting to hear him talk about it because you don't really expect a guy like him necessarily to talk about it. But then again, I mean, this is where it's coming from. These guys, and I don't know if he had the passion and then lost it and then found it again, or if he was all church and then discovered that there was a kingdom and that we were in it. I don't know how that goes. But here's a guy who really understands what it means to be as he calls it, a kingdom collaborator.
Yeah.
So I see there's a lot of freedom in that. There's a lot of freedom to know that, you know, the church is not a location. It's not a building. The kingdom is God's rule wherever God is, wherever his people are. There's just a lot of freedom in being able to get away from the status quo and get outside of the church box and realize, and the freedom that he shared when he said, hey, the church, if they're going to vote, they're always going to vote to go back to Egypt.
Yep.
Hey, the freedom for the pastor to find one or two others and take them out. Take them out of the status quo, go out into the big, brave new world and try something different and just see what happens.
Absolutely right. Absolutely. Jeff, can I read something that is a little off topic, but we are talking about dissatisfaction, fomenting dissatisfaction with the status quo. Today, our podcast will be released a day later than normal. And today, the day it will be released, now we're recording hours before, this is the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King, right?
Is it really?
It is. And, I wouldn't bring this up except for my wife just sent me an email that my son, who is in first grade, has been writing a biography about his favorite person they learned about in school. This is what my little first grade son wrote. He wrote, Martin Luther King Jr. was a great leader. He was born in Georgia in 1929. He was smart, too. He was 15 years old when he finished high school. Martin sometimes went to jail. Martin Luther King Jr. is my hero because he was the best pastor ever. I want to be like him because I want to be a pastor when I am older. Oh my goodness, Jeff. Oh my goodness.
That's awesome.
I hope that the spirit of dissatisfaction with the status quo, the desire to see the kingdom right of God made known here on earth can be as strong in us as it is apparently in my first grade son, Joseph, who just wants to be the best pastor ever. And it's a weird ending, but that just was something I was reading before we got started talking, and caught me a little sideways, got me a little misty-eyed.
Well, you know, you'd gladly get thrown under the bus by your son as long as it was from MLK Jr. Right? He was the best, yes. Best pastor ever.
I'd be second. That's fine. I could take second on that list.
Yeah, well, and there you got a guy. Oh, my goodness. You know, talk about dissatisfaction with the status quo.
Amen, yeah.
You know, Martin Luther King died for the cause of equality of all people, and yep. Especially of African Americans. And that is a great illustration. And he 50 years after his death is inspiring little boys just like him, yep, who want to be just like him.
Amen.
That's awesome. Well, Johnny, I'm not sure what's coming up next week. Actually, I am sure. We're never actually sure. Because somebody might come in and preempt Carl Vader. I mean, whoever would be our guest for next week.
Burn to
Carl,
you.
Carl, we haven't had Carl on. Man, I bet it's been close to a year.
Wow. Well, Carl, he's blown Vader up now. We had to have him back. He's blown up.
That's right. I had to schedule him through some lady in Chicago.
He's big time now, man. He's big time.
He was big time in me. No, actually he wasn't. I still have the cool thing is I still have his cell phone number, so I can always just text him. And
there
we've been
go.
Texting for years.
There you go.
And if I can't, you know, and I try to go through the right channels because I want everything to be organized on his, you know, calendar like I want it to be on mine. But when all else failed, he just texted me yesterday to let me know that I was 2 minutes late for the recording that I forgot to record with him. Hey, you know what? You know why? It was on my 200 churches calendar, but not on my Jeff Cady calendar.
Oh, Jeff, no.
Yes.
I keep one calendar.
Yes.
I'm not organized enough for two calendars.
Well, I do. I just keep one calendar. So that's the only thing that's ever gone on to my 200 churches calendar by mistake.
There you go.
I don't know how it happened.
That's funny.
So,
well, next week.
I think it was that Chicago lady.
She did it.
Yeah,
she did it.
Probably was.
Next week, we have Carl Vaders. It was a great conversation to be a part of, and we look forward to letting you hear that. Until then, it's been fun having you here on the 200 Churches Podcast.
We hope you've been encouraged and inspired by this episode of the 200 Churches Podcast. If you haven't already, subscribe at 200churches.com. And to access every one of our hundreds of past episodes, go to 200churches.com/podcast. You can count on us to be back next Wednesday with yet another brand new awesome episode recorded specifically for small church pastors just like you. So until next week, may God bless you as you lead and love the people in your 200 church.
I was talking to myself in an echo the entire time. And
yeah.
I was so distracted. So I'm not even sure if it had been clean. I'm not even sure what I said would have been worth pushing out there. So,
I am so sorry, Reggie. That's never happened before in 270 episodes.
Hey, I'm good for that kind of stuff. Well,
Reggie.
Will both of you, hey, Johnny, are both of you going to be asking questions? This
yes,
will be
sir.
Good.
Yes, sir.
Hopefully. Well, then, for as long as I can.
Let's have fun. What do you mean, as long as you can? Are you, like, have a kidney failure or something? Or what?
Something like that. I'm here in my house with 2 2-year-olds. As long as they cooperate, we'll be good to go.
Well, it's too late. they've already peed all over the floor and their, stuff while you weren't looking. So
you were right about that. I said to Jeff that I couldn't –